streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they
call me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is October 17th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Miss Melissa Ordonez. Melissa was charged with first-degree robbery and kidnapping in a case involving the killing of a man who was beaten and shot multiple times. She was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and she's now home, and hopefully we'll get her to call in tonight and tell her story. Before we do that, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Hello, everyone. Just thanking everybody for tuning in every week, and We definitely look forward to enjoying the show tonight, and we're asking everybody to just keep supporting us. And now we have done jumped from 50 prisons where the newsletter go to now we're in 150 prisons. So that's a blessing, and we just thanking God that the message is strongly getting spread across the country, and we are educating kids about the dangers of gangs, drugs, and violence, and educating the ladies about this domestic violence and also the men as well. So we just like to thank everybody for all what they do to help out the movement and get the word spread. And once again, I would like to thank all our members that's inside the federal prison and inside the state prison. And we thank y'all very much for educating.
All right, we're waiting for our guest to call in tonight. So while we do that, we are going to play a song by a brand new artist out of Detroit, Michigan, under Grand Slam Records, and his name is Kendall Day. All for you. Check it out.
Everything is all for you.
Everything I
do when it's love tonight. Baby, it's all
everything
for you. Because the clothes is the way that it goes.
All for you.
You know that it's all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Everything is all for you, baby.
Everything is all for you.
Welcome back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show, and we're hoping our guest is online. Melissa, are you there?
Yeah. Hi.
Welcome to the show. We're so happy to have
you
on. Thank you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you folks doing?
We're awesome, awesome. We're just happy that you could make it. We're excited to talk to you tonight. We're excited to hear your story, and definitely happy that you're out of prison, and we'll let you tell that story a little bit later how we met you, but I just want to hand the mic over to Rob for a minute so he can say hello.
Hey, hello. How you doing, Ms. Melissa?
Hi, how are you? I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
We're great. We were just thinking about you and just waiting on you to call into the show. We're glad you was able to call into the show, and we thank God for you, and once again, I just want to tell the viewers how I came about to meet you. Miss Melissa, everybody know I watch TV, and I like to keep up with what's happening in the crime field of life,
Yes.
And I just happened to see Miss Melissa on TV, and that's how I had got her information and started sending Miss Melissa our newsletter. And that was last July, and she became a member of the Streets of Love You Back movement while she was in prison. And she said when she got out, she would definitely be glad to join the movement out here in the streets and spread the message. And also, Miss Melissa, is here to tell her story and educate the youth about what's happening out here. So without further ado, Miss Melissa, we would like for you to formally introduce yourself, and we can get going.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Melissa Ardenez, and I've been born and raised out here in Hawaii, 27, just got out of prison 3 months ago, and right now, I'm actually at work right now, and I'm on my break, and, just loving life, loving freedom, and I'm happy to be a part of the movement, and thank you so much for you guys reaching out to me in prison, because when I was in prison, that was the lowest part of, I would say, most loneliness and lowest part of my life, and when you guys reached out to me, it really brought a big change in my life, and I knew I was going to do something great and positive with you folks. So,
wow,
Hello?
I said that's awesome. A lot of people don't realize how lonely it is for people in prison. And, a lot of people sometimes, they make one mistake. Sometimes it's not a first mistake. But for a lot of people in there, we know that no matter what you do, people still need people, and people still need, it's just got to be hard, and I'm glad that we brought a little bit of sunshine to your life and hopefully to others as well.
You guys brought a lot of sunshine, not just a little bit, but a lot. It really helped me and encouraged me, it made me a stronger person, and just getting a letter and a newsletter and just reading all your information, that you guys spread the word, it really lifted me up, and it made my days, weeks, and months.
Wow. You know, it makes our days too when we get letters back from inmates. You know, our newsletter started out in just a few prisons, and now they're in, I think, over 120-something prisons. So we're definitely, you know, trying to spread that message, and we're getting, you know, quite a few letters back, and it's nice to hear back from the inmates as well. And it's even nicer when they come home like you, and we get to talk to you after you're out of those gates. And let's go back a little bit, Melissa, and start at the beginning when you were young. You were raised by your grandmother. So tell us a little bit about your childhood, what it was like growing up, and kind of what led you into drugs, because you did get hooked on meth and different things like that.
Yeah,
so let us know what happened.
Well, I started, I was raised by my grandmother. My mother and father, they had me when they were in high school, so they were never married. They were just teenage lovers. And so my grandmother and grandfather looked after me, and they did the best that they could to raise me, and I love them, you know, so much, because they've always been there for me till this day. And I've just been at home, and they always work till this day. They work, you know, all my family work, and I would just, after school, I'll just go home, and I would find myself bored doing the same things. And then I would hang with friends, neighborhood friends, and slowly I just somehow found myself always hanging out late at night with my neighborhood friends, and just I got caught up, and I started smoking cigarettes. You know, I started running away from home, and slowly things that I wasn't supposed to do, I started doing, and I've never, I guess, I wasn't bothered by whatever kind of, how should I say it, whatever, if I got into trouble, I wouldn't have been bothered by whatever action would have taken place, if I would have gone to juvenile home, you know, nothing like that really scared me. I just wanted to have fun and hang out with friends. And so by the time I was eighth grade, I started smoking crystal meth. And in Hawaii, Hawaii is one of the most, maybe like top five states that has crystal meth problems. So, yeah. I started using when I was in eighth grade, and I was addicted for 3 years straight throughout high school. You know, I dropped out of school a few times, but by the grace of God, every day, even when I would be at in the street and I would be doing drugs, and there was always a Bible around, and I would read scriptures here and there, open it up, and I knew there was a God, but I felt it, but my circumstances around me, when I look around, it was just drugs, money, you know, sex, and just a fast lifestyle. But for one day, I still remember that day. It was October 14, 2001. I was behind a friend's truck, and I just cried out to God, and I said, God, you know, I can't do this anymore. And I think I was only 15 years old, and I was on the streets, and my family basically kind of gave up on me, let me do whatever I wanted. And I went to sleep, and the next day, God took that desire to my heart, and I've never touched crystal meth after that.
Wow. That's amazing, yeah. Because crystal meth is really hard to get off of.
Yes, I thought I wouldn't ever be able to get off of crystal meth, but God, I know it was God that really... He knew my heart, and I just cried out that night by myself in the back of my friend's truck, and I couldn't do it anymore. I was wasting my life away.
Right. So after that, what happened? Did you get your life back in order, and what happened after that?
I did. Honestly, I got off of drugs, but I was still hanging with the same kind of people, and those were like my daily associates. And I got sober. I got my GED before my high school class graduated, and but I started selling drugs. I got into making money, and so selling drugs, you know, that brought another kind of rush, another kind of powerful feeling over me, because I was only 15, 16, and I realized, like, wow, all this money, all this drugs, all this people, like, I could tell them what to do when I wanted them to do it just for drugs, and I could have all this money and do whatever I wanted with it. So I started selling drugs, and, you know, by the grace of God, I haven't got in trouble for that. But I still was in the same lifestyle, but I was sober. It was different.
Right. Well, yeah, selling drugs is quick money, you know, if you don't get caught, and you know, you can make a lot of money at it. But yeah, definitely using drugs and selling drugs doesn't go together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so when I was selling it, it was just like, now that I look back on it, you know, I didn't realize all the people I was hurting, like who I was selling. Even if I wasn't selling the drugs directly to those people who used, I passed it on to somebody else. Now I look back on it, and it's like, I've heard it. Maybe there's somebody out there, you know, a family that is ruined because their son, their daughter is hooked on drugs. You know, I have a bigger picture of the drugs that I sold, what it could have done to other people and their lives and innocent lives. And it's just, today I wouldn't do go back to that kind of lifestyle, because I have friends now that are starting to use drugs, you know, and it tears my heart apart to just see that. I don't know, it's a experience, I guess, a person would just have to go through to really understand what I'm trying to say.
Right. So you were caught up with the wrong people, and you ended up catching a case. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I got in Mali when I was 18, I believe. When I was 18, I got caught up with some people, and it was an ice ring, a crystal meth ice ring, about 15 of us that got arrested, but I knew only one person, and that person, he had a cell phone that was tapped. It was an Nextel cell phone, and because him and I talked over the phone, and I agreed, you know, to, he was selling drugs, and I agreed to see it, then that, I didn't know that the feds were listening to his phone calls, and I got pulled in for that. So when I was 18, you know, they came to my house, the DEA, FBI, they came to my house, knocked on the door, and it kind of goes a little deeper, because that day that I got arrested at my house, I was pregnant for the first time, and I actually set up an abortion appointment, and I just got out of bed, and I was 20 minutes away, right down the road from doing an abortion, and I got this sudden knock on my door, and so I went in my bedroom, I turned on all the cameras around my house, and I saw these two guys and with head caps on, and I was just kind of wondering what they were doing, and automatically I thought they were probably the police, but I didn't know why they were there. And so so it took me a while to open the door, but I eventually opened the door, and they arrested me, and they took me in at Maui, the island of Maui. They took me in custody, and they didn't tell me what I was arrested for yet. I guess that's just the way the FBI works, but they pulled me into the Maui cell block, and because in Hawaii there's only one federal holding place, it's on another island in Oahu, so they had me held in the Maui cell block for a few hours, and then they took me to the airport, and then shipped me on the airplane to Oahu's federal prison, and that was my very first time being incarcerated as an adult, because throughout teenage years, I've been to Santa Clarita juvenile hall, but this was the first time when I was 18 being locked up in an adult prison. And at that time, you know, I broke down again. And thank God my family was there again. My grandmother, my rest of my family was there to support me and love me through no matter what happened. And they helped me get an attorney. I actually wanted to hire the best attorney, so I called around and I wanted to hire John and Cochran, but you know that was impossible. So I hired the best attorney in Hawaii, Michael J. Green, and he got me out of there. It was my first time offense. He got me out. When I finally got sentenced, the judge sentenced me to 3 years probation, and that was a miracle, and a lot of people in Hawaii hasn't ever seen that kind of sentencing before, because usually a federal case, it doesn't matter if it's small or big, no matter what your role in it is, usually they sentence you to a lot of time. But my attorney, and you know, it was because of the grace of God, they had mercy on me and they gave me a second chance to life, and they gave me 3 years probation.
And so you ended up doing time. So what happened after that?
After that, I asked the judge if I could move away out of the state, you know, change my life, start college. I never would have thought I could have been somebody, because I came from a life of drugs. So I try to build myself up, be independent, and do the right thing and go to college, maybe be a doctor someday, whatnot. And the judge, everybody agreed for me to move away from Maui. So that summer after I got sentenced, I flew to 3-4 different states, and I chose Oklahoma. But by the time the college semester started, the paperwork for my transfer, my federal transfer, didn't process. So I asked my probation officer and the judge if I could just move off of the island and move to another island in Hawaii, and they agreed. And so I chose Oahu, and I came here to Oahu, and I started my life over. I was attending University of Hawaii for a year and a half. I attended cosmetology school. I completed my cosmetology school, and then I turned 21. And once I turned 21, I partied. I drank a lot. I partied in Waikiki. I didn't do drugs. I just really drank a lot. And in Waikiki, in Hawaii, you meet hundreds and thousands of people from all over the world. You know, people come here, and I got back into an old lifestyle, and I started hanging around with the same kind of people from the past, and I got caught up again, and I got into a relationship, and you know, I thought I knew what I was doing, and I had control, and you know, somehow along the way, it just, I am where I am today because of wrong choices that I've made at that time.
Right. So you got mixed up with this relationship, and you, like you said, it was still the old lifestyle. Drugs were involved and different things. Now, did they charge you with robbery and kidnapping in a murder case?
They charged me accessory to robbery, kidnapping, and burglary. And my bail was set at, because I was on federal probation, and then I picked up these charges, and so they arrested me. They took me into custody. I had a federal detainer on me, and then my bail was set at $2 million at first, and I couldn't, even if I was to have bailed, I would have had a federal detainer, so they would have shipped me straight to federal custody. So I just sat there, and I hired Michael Green again, and yeah, I hired Michael Green again, and I'm considered like a second strike repeat offender by the age of 21. And I did my state time. My pretrial was about 2 years, so I sat in state custody pretrial 2 years, and then finally when I got sentenced, the judge from facing 20 to life or the spending the rest of my life in prison, my attorney got me an open 10 years, which is those three charges, they ran concurrent, and I just had to do an open 10 years. So out of the 10 years, the state made me, the parole board made me do three and a half years in custody, in state custody. And then after I did the state time, I had to go see the federal judge because I violated my federal conditions by picking up new charges. And for my first time violation on the federal side, they gave me 18 months. So I did the 18 months right after the 3.5 years. So altogether, I did 5 years in custody.
Wow. Compared to a whole lifetime, I mean, we're glad that you're home now. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Miss Melissa,
yeah.
We just want to once again thank you for coming on the show and for spreading your message, you know. And what
thank
I would
you.
Like to ask you, what advice would you give these youth and others out here about trying to live that lifestyle?
The advice I want to give is that to women, young kids, even men, you know, when you have money on your mind and that's the only thing you're chasing, and there's people out there that's going to give you handouts and give you free this, free that, just know that it's not free. You know, like, there's always a price to pay. If you accept something, there could have an obligation to it. You never, and just be very careful, because you never know if your family member, your friend, if they're being watched, if they have police looking for them, you don't know what kind of person they are. And it's so easy to be associated or be considered affiliated with a person and get caught up in a case. It's so easy. And young women, you know, if they come to you and you think that they're the perfect guy, you know, you really need to get to know them and really know them for years. And, you know, don't just jump into anything, because when you rush things and you're not patient, you could end up doing things that you regret. And I've regret a lot of things, and but today, you know, I thank God that I'm free and I'm out and I'm doing the right thing, because nothing amounts to the feeling of just being free. Just being free, just having your family, your loved ones, someone who truly loves you for the person you are, nothing can buy that. Nothing can buy true love. And I would just say, you know, Know who you are, love yourself, and always thank God, and always just know that God loves you no matter, Jesus loves you no matter what kind of choices you make, good, bad, it doesn't matter. Jesus will always love you, and drugs and money and sex, that whole lifestyle, it's so not worth it, because, you know, growing up, it will do things to you that will totally destroy yourself, your inner self, your mind, your body, and it's just best to just stay away from any kind of lifestyle like that. The pressure, there's gonna have peer pressure, and you could be easily influenced, but it just all depends on you, and you need to be strong and just have that. Just be strong and just say no, and just stand up for what is right.
And Melissa, for all the young women that think maybe going to prison makes you cool. Talk a little bit about what it's like being in prison for a young woman.
Being in prison for a young woman, it's scary at first. You know, I came from, when I got arrested, I'm used to like a high maintenance lifestyle, having what I wanted when I wanted. And when I got arrested, I was wearing Louis Vuitton, everything was Louis Vuitton, my diamonds, everything, and it just got all taken away from me. And so I went to prison, and I had absolutely nothing. They gave me bras and underwears that were used, and I had to use that and make the best of it. They gave me uniforms that were old, ruggedy, and just cut up and stained, and it's so bad. In prison, depends where you are, though, but where I was, all they fed you was rice and bread and for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I had to get used to that, and it just really broke me down. I was surrounded by women 24/7. I had to ask for toilet paper. I had to ask for pads, you know, just women kind of personal belongings, and it really humbled me. It really made me have to accept my circumstances and made me have to accept who I am. There is no mirrors in there, so I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. You know, I couldn't pluck my eyebrows. I couldn't shave. I had to wait for the officer to tell me it was okay to shave, and they gave me the shaver. You know, it was really terrible. I was in there for 5 years, and it just, you know, after a while, when I got used to it, and I sat in there, and I got letters from family, and it just made me feel better. But as a woman, I don't have no kids, so before going to prison, I was so adamant about, no, I don't want any kids in my life. I just want to be single for the rest of my life and just do what I want to do. But after being around women 24/7, mothers, grandmothers, aunties, now it's like, you know, maybe I do want a family someday. Maybe after hearing their stories and what they've been through, it really changed my life, because there's a lot of, there's actually a lot of creative and talented women and men incarcerated, you know, because we make stuff out of nothing. Like, right. For example, we would make handbags out of newspaper and paper chip bags, you know, so we really learn how to survive in there with nothing.
Wow. And that's what a lot of these young women and men have here, because everybody get caught up in the lifestyle, the money, the cause, and, you know, all of that, you know. But at the end of the road, the bottom line is that the streets definitely don't love you back. And at the end of that road is death for the penitentiary. And there's no successful drug dealer. There's no successful gangster, you know what I mean, because the government and the feds ain't going to let you be that, you know what I mean, unless you just go and change your life and do the right thing. Because if you're still out there in that street world, you better believe it's going to be game over real soon. Because like you said, you know, they got the phones tapped, even your own brother, your cousin, your mama, your daddy.
Yeah.
Even they'll snitch on you. You feel me? It's no love in there, period. You know, I was just reading an article today where a guy had told on his own brother. Own blood brother, same mama, same daddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that happened out here a few times. There's some cases, you know, I've witnessed a lot of that. People come in and they become my cellmate, and their own family member, their own mother told on them, their own, their own brother told on them. And it's just, there's no loyalties, you know, and when it really comes down to it, they're going to want to save themselves versus...
No. At all. And my man, he killed 14 people. He had 14 bodies on him. And they wanted his brother, his cousin, and another one of their padres And the brother stepped up to the plate, told on everybody on a murder case that happened way back in the 70s. You know what I mean? My man's 75 years old, and his homeboy 83 years old now. They just both got a life sentence in 2007. You feel me? So they definitely sitting there in their cell saying, damn. You know what I mean? I know they saying that. They saying, I'm 75, I'm 83, and I'm dead in here. I got a natural life sentence. It's game over.
In prison, it's a whole nother world. You know, if you've never been there, then you couldn't really fully understand it. But living prison is a whole nother world. It's so much more different.
Oh, yeah. I know. I done been there. You know what I'm saying? So it's a whole nother universe to people who ain't lived a street life, people who ain't been in the joint, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People who has not been around that real, real lifestyle, period. You know what I mean? You can watch TV and see that, or you can see a guy, you know what I mean, with 2-3 pounds of weed, but that ain't shit. I'm talking about the real life where cats making millions of dollars, and then all that shit is stripped away from you, and now you have nothing. And now you have to rely on somebody to send your money order. Now you have to rely on somebody to accept your phone call. Now you have to rely on somebody to get your legal papers to the right people. So it's a lot of dependency when you go to the joint, period.
Yes, that's true.
You know? And how much longer do you got at your break, Miss Melissa? We don't want to overextend it, you know?
Well, I can talk. I have, like, maybe 15 more. I have 15 minutes on my break.
Okay, then. That sounds like a winner. So I'm going to pass the phone back to the missus because your story is so powerful, and, you know, we definitely wanted your story to get out here. And after you get through speaking on the radio show, people can come back and listen to your show 24/7, 24 hours a day, you know. So your post will be right up on our website and on our radio show site. So what I want you to really talk about now, Ms. Melissa, I want you to let the viewers know the incident that happened that night. You know, it cost somebody their life, you know, and I want you to let the viewers know, how did that make you feel as a woman at that time? You know, you wasn't fully a woman yet. You were still 21 years old, correct?
Yes.
Right. Let the viewers know, how did that make you feel that a life was took in all of this, you know, scenario that was going on?
At first, you know, I dated a guy and we dated off and on, and then I didn't want to be with him, and so I would still party down Waikiki and be at the nightclubs, and I met another guy, and the victim of the case, I've only known him for a couple of weeks, and we started hanging out, and basically the first guy that I left, I ended up leaving him, he found out, and he stalked us and saw me and the other guy hanging out in Waikiki and partying, and he became jealous, and there ended up having an altercation where there was a first shootout, and the guy I was seeing, he ended up shooting at my ex-boyfriend then, and after that, it just became retaliation, and so a couple nights after that, that's when my ex-boyfriend and his friend then came back and came to, I don't know if they wanted to kill him, but they ended up beating him up, and it just ended up turning really bad. And when I was in that situation, I didn't, everything just escalated, and I, as a woman, I didn't know what to do. I was scared to death. I didn't know if I should have gone to the police, if I should have said what had happened. I didn't know if I should have just walked away and just leave it as it was. I just didn't know what to do. You know, there's no manual. I wasn't I wasn't raised where there, you know, here, this is what you do when this kind of situation happens. So at yeah. that time, I just, you know, I made some poor choices, and when they came to the house to beat him up or whatever, my heart just, like, I just broke down. I cried. I couldn't stop crying. And it was a really ugly scene. And I didn't know that was going to happen, but it happened. And after that, you know, my life changed forever. And he was, even though I didn't know him really well, you know, I know he had a daughter, you know, I didn't know if he was married or if he had a girlfriend or what was going on, but I know that he was somebody's son and somebody's brother and somebody's cousin, and it really didn't all hit me until after I gone to prison, until after I really sat down and I really opened up to God again, you know, and because God knows everything. He knows what would happen before, after. He knew everything, and it just, everything just, I don't know, man. And, you know, the media just really made it seem something that it wasn't, but that's just how the media is, especially cases like that in Hawaii. They don't ever see that. It's once in a lifetime, that once in a, what, 10 years, 5 years that they see these kind of really high-profile cases. So it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't know. If there anything in my past today that I would bring up is I would, the only thing I would be open to from my past is the victim's family. And if they ever wanted to talk to me or, you know, I just hope they forgive me as being caught up in their family's death, you know, and that's the only thing that I would really want. But, you know, everybody needs time to heal, and I don't know what they're going through. But yeah, that it really changed my life. And today, when I make choices, I'm so aware of situations now, and I'm so careful, and I value myself. And it's just, I wouldn't ever want anything like that to happen to anybody. It's so easy to get caught up and to something to happen that you didn't expect to happen, but there's nothing you can do to change it.
Right. So on nationwide, you know, radio, would you like to, you know, send out an apology to the victim's family?
Yes, I do. To Benjamin Grajeda's family, daughter, mother, sisters, brothers, you know, I apologize truly and deeply for what has happened and the loss of Benjamin. And if ever you folks want to talk to me, I am more than willing and open to, I would go the extra extent to go to talk to you folks in person, or even if not in person, you know, if you guys want to know from me what happened, I am more than willing to talk about it.
Amen. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I think, you know, that's a great gesture starting off right there, because you has recognized what you have did wrong. And you have recognized that you have made wrong choices, and you have recognized what God has done for you, and how he's opened your mind and changed your mind as well. And once again, we would just like to thank you for being a guest on our radio show. And
you're welcome.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the first interview you have done since you've been home. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So we definitely honored that we was the first radio show that you have did this interview with. And once again, spreading your message of the Streets Don't Love You Back. And we're so proud and delighted to have you as a member of the Streets Don't Love You Back, you know. So we just want you to continue your journey and continue spreading the message and keeping your head up and keeping God first and steady letting people know that at the end of the game, the streets is definitely not going to love you back. It's death or the penitentiary. And
yeah,
I'm going to turn the mic over to the missus.
Melissa,
yes.
talk a little bit to the mothers and the grandmothers and the fathers and grandfathers, you know, and maybe you can tell us a little bit while you have, if you have a few more minutes, about your relationship, if you have one with your mother. But for parents and grandparents that are raising children, and you know, what advice would you have for them, you know, like you were out running the streets and they kind of just let you because maybe they got tired of trying to tell you not to. But what advice would you give to parents and grandparents of young teenagers that are
working? The advice I would give is to just really keep ask questions, always ask questions about how their day was, you know, tell them you love them, sit down with them, get to know them. If you're not home and they're at home, always call, always check up, always make sure that they're staying busy. Put them in a sports activity, find a hobby that they could do, or, you know, to just keep themselves busy. Because for me, I went to piano lessons, but it just I had so much free time that it was easy for me to get caught up in doing other things. And I know my grandmother loves me and always did because she's still here till this day for me. It's just make time, make all the time that you can to just protect your grandchild, to protect your son, your daughter, to when, if they tell you, like for me, I got raped at a young age and I was molested and I told my mother and she never believed me, you know. And so if your children tell you those kind of things, like, believe them, you know, and do everything you can to protect them and provide a safe home for them, a safe setting. Even if maybe you can't make ends meet, you know, just as long as you're there with your child, your grandchild, it really makes a difference because my grandparents weren't there with me all the time and I just had so much things that I could do and I did and, you know, wrong choices I've made. But if somebody was there, I believe that I would have made different choices.
Now, did your grandparents know you were using drugs or did you hide that for a long time from them?
My family, well, see, my mother made like she didn't do drugs, and then this drug dealer I hooked up with when he was dropping me home one day, he was like, "This is where you live?" I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "Who is so-and-so to you?" I'm like, "My mom and my stepdad." And then that's when he told me that he sold them drugs, and that just, like, really blow me away, you know, at that age. And so there was a lot of, like, I guess, secrets that my family, they did drugs, but they were functional addicts, I guess. They still did what they had to do, but they did drugs. But yeah, it's just, I was a real rebellious one that I went all out and did everything.
Right. Well, that you have a powerful story, and we're, you know, glad that you could come on our show and share it. And we look forward to
to, you know, networking with you in the future and continue to follow you and keep up with you. And you know, you're welcome to come on our show anytime. We're live every Wednesday night, and you're already a member of our website. So, you know, keep in touch with us. Let us know what's going on. And anytime you need to speak out or something, let us know, and we'll get you on a show. But
okay.
We really, really appreciate you taking the time out to come on, and we're really happy that we were able to help make a difference while you were in prison, and we hope to continue to help make a difference, you know, while you're out of prison. And we know, we thank you for giving us that opportunity as well.
You're welcome.
Any last shout-outs, Floyd?
Yeah, once again, I just want to thank you for coming on the show, Ms. Melissa, and spreading your message once again. And we also thank you for, you know, writing that nice piece that you sent us, and we put in the newsletter, so to let everybody know that has not seen it, you know, Miss Melissa was featured in one of our newsletters, and that newsletter is still circulating, and people can still read her story in the newsletter as well. And once again, I want to thank all our members in the prison system, and I want to thank all our members in the streets. And I want to give a shout out to my three brothers that's doing life in the penitentiary, to my brother Marvell, to my little brother Christopher, and my little brother Robbie. Keep holding it down, you know what I mean? And we thank y'all for pushing the movement strong in the joint. And we just study educating these kids about these gangs, drugs, and violence, and these young ladies and men about this domestic violence thing. So is there any last shout-outs you'd like to give, Ms. Melissa?
Just so you guys, you know, thank you for having me on this show, and, you know, thank God for this opportunity. And I love my family, and today it's such a blessing to just be right here on this show, and I hope that I've touched or I've helped or my message somehow got to somebody and helped them in a positive way. And just know that the street don't love you back whatsoever, no matter what. If you think it's going right, it's going okay, you're safe, you're not. The streets don't love you back no matter what.
Amen. And with that being said and did, we would like everybody that's listening tonight that has not joined our movement site, we ask you to go join the site at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. Also, don't forget to log on to our store page and order our Streets Don't Love You Back clothesline. Also, if you have not picked up that book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, order that. The domestic violence book, Never Hit a Woman, also order that. And if you'd like to book me to speak anywhere, also log on to the website. Our speaking engagement information is right there on the website. And I speak at all kind of events, different schools, and different big functions that we go to. So we study spreading that message, and we study educating, like I said. And I want to give a big shout-out to my little sister, Francetta, and her new artist, Kendall Day, that we're pushing as well. He's a great R&B artist, and he got a new song out, All For You, and we're pushing that. So I want to give a big shout-out to my little sister and my brother-in-law, you know what I mean, that's doing something good, you know, for the community and for the people. And also I want to let the viewers know that we have launched 16 of my songs on iTunes and 40 different online stores, and some of my music from back in the 90s, and some of my music from now that's on the Streets Don't Love You Back soundtrack that goes with the book. So we got a lot of things popping off and jumping off, you know, and the holiday season is coming up. So we will be letting everybody know, and this will be our fourth year with our Christmas toy drive for the kids that's coming up. And we'll be doing something for that again. So we'll be letting all our viewers know about that as well. And I'm going to pass the mic to the missus for any last words. And once again, Ms. Melissa, we appreciate you coming on the show and spreading your message. And we thank you so much for being part of the movement.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Melissa, once again. And we're going to close out tonight. And We're going to go out with a song by OG Suicide, Never Give Up. Please join us back here every Wednesday night live. You can archive our show. You can find that at thestreetsdontloveyoubackning.com or just Google The Streets Don't Love You Back. And we thank you for your support. Good night.
Look, homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all, huh? What's good?
Can't make no shot, man. Can't make no shots.
I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect.
I love you.
You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yeah.
All right? Okay, loved ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's all right.
No matter what it is in life that you want, you gotta go out there and get it. Don't let it come to a sleeper but a dream.